Welcome to the Leader's Edge, where we celebrate leadership and shine a light on the visionary leaders that are shaping the future. Hey, I'm H.R. Huntsman, founder of Leader's Edge, creator of the Leader's Edge Performance Engine and Leader's Edge University. And I'm thrilled to bring you stories from leaders who are making a difference around the world. In each episode, we champion the innovative strategies, courageous decisions, and inspiring journeys of those who lead with purpose and passion. So whether you're looking to refine your leadership skills or you simply want to be inspired, my friend, you are in the right place. In this episode, I'd like you to meet Glenn Bostock. Glenn is a seasoned entrepreneur, speaker, and author with over 40 years of experience building businesses and developing people. He is the driving force behind SnapCab, where he's focused not just on growth, but on creating a workplace where people feel supported, useful, and part of something meaningful. Glenn's philosophy challenges traditional management thinking, emphasizing that businesses should function more like a human body, where every part matters and contributes to the whole. Through his upcoming book, A Human Business, he shares a new paradigm for fixing what's broken in work by focusing on community, usefulness, and authentic leadership. Driven by a belief that was instilled early in his life, that we are here to serve and be useful to others, Glenn has built his career around helping people thrive, both personally and professionally. His approach proves that strong culture and strong performance don't have to be at odds. Get ready to be inspired by Glenn Bostock. Glenn, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate you being here, sir.
Oh, thanks for having me, HR.
Yeah, you're very welcome. I want to jump in. I believe the success leaves clues. I speak about that wherever I go. So I'd like to go back early. You share that you struggled in school growing up. Mm-hmm. How did that experience shape the kind of environment that you have worked to build at SnapCab?
Man, I'll tell you, at the time, I was complaining to a mentor of mine some years ago about how much I disliked my school life, complete failure, really hated how I was treated by my peers in my class. And my mentor said, well, where would you be today if it wasn't for that experience? And I'm like, you know, it's true. I got an advanced degree on how to handle failure. Right. Like I know all about failure, and that's key to being able to grow. And I also know what it feels like when you're not supported by your peers.
Okay.
So by having learning disabilities and having my peers treat me like I was the dumb kid in class, I could have functioned a lot better than I did, but the way I was treated really made me dysfunctional. And I decided I didn't, when I got my own company, I didn't want to recreate that situation for my employees.
Well, let's connect some of those dots then. You went from being so learning disability, and then one thing leads to another. You're running your own company. There's got to be more about that history in the middle there.
Yeah.
You just don't go from that kid to running a company.
No, you don't. Yeah, definitely steps. All right. So I was reading cross-eyed. I think now if I was formally diagnosed, I'd have dyslexia. A couple of my kids are diagnosed with ADHD. I would, okay, when I read about ADHD, I go, well, they're talking about me. So I had these issues.
Okay.
All the way through school, I suffered, and I just didn't belong in school. When I went to college, I went to college for woodworking, which I loved. When I was in school, I worked at my dad's wood shop, and I loved that. Playing outside of school, I loved that. In school, it's like two different people. There's in school, loser Glenn, out of school, high functioning, kind of doing elaborate engineering things like building sail cars and, you know, hang gliders and things with bamboo and tarps outside of school.
Oh my goodness.
But the two never came together.
Interesting.
Until I went to school for woodworking.
Okay.
So when I started woodworking, then I decided to go into business with a couple of my college buddies, and we rented a barn, and we had a co-op of machinery, We each had our own little businesses, but that's how I started, was in my barn with my wife. And we were refinishing furniture and fixing furniture, wanting to get into making one of a kind custom furniture, which I eventually, and that happened, that we grew into that. When I started having kids, we needed a lot more money than what my custom cabinet making business was able to provide. And gosh, when I my first two kids, my wife was in tears when she goes shopping. We had to get this thing called WIC. It was I was against public assistance. We got WIC. It apparently stands for Women, Infants, and Children. I thought it stood for Women, Infants, and Cabinet Makers. Like I couldn't make money. And but when my then my third child, we didn't have insurance for maternity because we cut out the extra. We weren't going to have more kids. We couldn't afford the two we had. And once you know it, some by some miracle, I don't know what happened. Now we're pregnant with a third child with no maternity insurance. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, could
Wow.
this get worse? But I thought, well, I'm not going to blow away. Something's going to happen. And I ended up getting into introduced to the elevator remodeling business. So elevators are cabinets like I was building, but inside out. So it's same skill set. I started remodeling elevators around Philadelphia. Turned out there was a big need for it. That paid well. People said my prices were too low. I raised my prices. They still thought my prices were too low. So I made a career of elevator remodeling. And then because I was designing and installing it myself, I designed a system that went in quickly. I patented the system. And then Otis Elevator saw that system and they gave me a national contract. And at the time, there was about five of us.
Wow.
So that's how the company got in a position to really grow. So when they looked at my system and said, well, we need this everywhere. Could you send kits? Like it's kind of like bath fitters where I'll send the
Sure.
parts that are custom made to fit your elevator anywhere in North America. And then what my system did was allow their elevator maintenance people to install those.
Okay.
So I had mentors at the time and they said, Glenn, there's no way you could possibly do this. Just license them to use your system and just be done with it. And I'm like, well, hey, I would like to give this a shot. I would love to fail at this. If I'm going to fail at something, I've already failed at enough things in school. I'd like to fail at this. I'm going to do this and let's see how badly this goes. What's the worst that can happen? They're going to be mad at me when I can't deliver. And Otis sent me to a lean manufacturing school they had.
Wow.
They worked with me and it ramped up about 30% every year. So I went from five guys and under $1 million worth of revenue to now we're over $30 million revenue. I've got over 140 employees. I've got over 100,000 square feet of manufacturing space in US and Canada.
I have so many questions. I have questions around, we're going to talk about the humanity side. That's a big part of your philosophy of leadership and business. We're going to talk about your book, A Human Business. But I want to hear about the entrepreneur side, how you went from, in your words, failing in school, failing as a woodworker, to starting your own business and becoming a successful business. That's a huge leap. So where did the entrepreneurial bug come from to run your own joint? I'm always curious about that from entrepreneurs.
When I loved woodworking.
Okay.
It's something I could do. I had a sense of pride in doing that. So I worked for a cabinet maker and learned from him. Then I worked for a second cabinet maker who's very skilled. So I really learned how you could make a living at cabinet making. But they paid me like, it was, I think it's $5 an hour back in 1981. And 82. And what that was helpful because I learned. And so one piece of advice I'd give anybody is don't worry about how much you get paid in your early jobs. Go get the job that's going to give you the experience you want to have.
Okay.
Experience is far more important than money when you're starting out. I took that experience and I thought, well, I'm already used to not making a lot of money. I bet I could start doing a business and not make money working for myself because that's what I'm currently doing. So I started in that barn and I took the crappy jobs that nobody else wanted to do. Who wants to get covered in chemicals, refinishing furniture and fixing broken furniture? Everybody has broken furniture that needs to be refinished, easy to get into. So I would recommend, everybody wants to do the cushy fun jobs,
Course.
but take the crappy jobs that nobody else wants. That's the way I got into business. I think almost anybody could get a job picking up dog poop. I mean, it's not that hard to getting into business. And the next thing is once you have the machine of, taking deposits, having a bank account, doing all the nuts and bolts of having a business, now you can start growing your business. And, opportunity starts coming your way. And originally in my business, I was focused on having a love of doing high-end cabinet work. And I was doing what I wanted to do. And I kept chasing what I wanted. And what I wanted didn't pay well. It made me feel good. I loved the work, but it didn't pay well. And when I started having kids, I started asking another question. Instead of asking what I want, maybe I should be asking what would be really useful? What would be useful to the market? What would be useful to customers? And I was able to combine what I loved doing, this cabinet work, with what the market actually needed. And that made all the difference. And I've just had a practice now of looking to see how I can be useful. And I look at how can I be useful in alignment with things I love to do.
Okay.
And I've got a career of that. And I've gone through real problems at work. But that's how I got going.
Okay. I love that story. It's not hard to see where your resilience comes from, your passion for the underdog comes from, your love for people. Let's talk about the entrepreneurial side for just a second, then we're going to get into the book. It's one thing to do what you love and then find another avenue to be useful. And I love that distinction, by the way. And I'm curious
Right.
what you would say to the people who say, just follow your heart, just do what you love, and you'll never work a day in your life. But then I also want to hear about running your own company with one, two, three people is not that challenging, right? You're in the mix, you're doing the stuff, you're working on the cabinets or the elevators. But when you start getting around 10 plus people, you have to shift the way you lead now.
Yeah.
I'm curious when you went from producer, operator to leader of humans, what was that shift like for you? And then we'll talk about some of
Okay.
your principles.
Yeah. I'll say that there's probably like three big shifts,
Okay, good. Let's hear them.
and some of them were mistakes.
Yeah, I love it. Let's go.
So the first shift was, so there we were, a half a dozen craftsmen
Yeah.
doing handcrafted custom. We were still doing some cabinet work, but mostly elevator interiors. We get this contract from Otis Elevator. I'm just like, hey, we got to work a lot faster. Come on, guys, let's work faster.
Right.
And it was just a disaster. And then a buddy of mine who makes handmade spoons, Jonathan Spoons, put me onto this book called The E-Myth. Have you heard this book, The
Sure,
E-Myth?
sure.
Well, I took that book home and I didn't come back to work until I completely consumed it and made a business plan. And what that book says, instead of working in your business, you work on it, and you want to build your one business as if you're building 1,000 that are all identical. You want to
Perfect.
have standard operating procedures for everything that you do.
Yep.
So I came back and I started, like, instead of making elevator interiors, I started making work areas for building elevator interiors. Here's your tools, here's your work instruction.
Perfect.
And then we started hiring. I think we had quite a few like landscapers come in doing what these craftsmen were doing, and they could do it in about half the time that the craftsmen were doing it because all the information was right there in front of them. And then we were able to scale. Then as the business scaled and grew and grew and grew, the next stage was, now this is turning into kind of a big business. I'm now making multi-million dollars. And I really didn't graduate from, I went to school for woodworking and I didn't graduate. So I don't even have a college degree. And I'm like, I am definitely, there's like a, I'm definitely the wrong person to lead like a real company. This is like a real company now. Before, when you're working for yourself, it's like you're self-employed with helpers.
That's right.
That's different than actually having to have a real company.
Right.
And, but I did have a very good idea about business in that I was building that, instead of me being interested in designing and building cabinets, I was interested in, it's like, well, what do we need now to design and build this company? We need a database. We need a way to make a workbook for these jobs that's really simple, So I'm very good at putting together the things that we need. And it turns out that those things line up with what a business person would need. But leadership wise, I didn't have an MBA or anything like that. So then I hired somebody with an MBA. And over probably 15 years, I hired about four other leaders, intending to have them take over the company because I was had so little confidence in myself.
Interesting.
Every one of them wanted to take it into a different direction that didn't feel right to me. You could argue that, well, you're the founder, of course. You could argue that different ways. But as it turns out, I decided to take the business over, but I had to change how the business was constructed. So instead of hiring the most skilled people for every position and hiring the skilled MBA person to lead it, and I'm like, well, why don't we have the not very educated woodworker lead it? But I'm going to need a lot of help. So for me to be the CEO of a $30 million company now in two different countries, I literally need about three people to do my job of CEO. I've got an assistant. I don't do my own emails. I don't do my calendar. She's after me. She manages me all day long,
Sure.
and it frees me up so I can do things like focus with you.
Sure.
I have a pretty large group of mentors. I can't recommend mentors enough. We all get wrapped up in our egos. So if you can talk about what's going on in your life as a leader to a team of people, they'll tell you what they see disattached from your ego. So you're going to get much better answers from a group than you will from yourself.
I love it.
You get to decide which answers you're going to go with, but wouldn't you like to have a
Yeah.
bunch of choices of answers?
Good for you.
I join peer groups. And so I changed how we built the business, and that's what led to me writing this book. So I could talk about the book now, because the book was the transformation of how do you take somebody who's not equipped to do. I think people think CEOs are amazing people that can do all of these things, and the reality is I can do a couple things really well and a lot of things really poorly, but if I work with a team, it's incredible what you can get done. And if you have people that feel appreciated and you've given them work that they love to do, they're right there to help you. So we're doing this as a group, and they're allowing me to be the leader.
Here's what I find fascinating. We're going to dive into the book now. Here's what I find fascinating, Glenn. The kid who hated school, could not stand school, is actually a passionate learner, invites other people to
Yes.
teach him, and
That's
now
right.
has written a book.
That's right.
It's
That's right.
amazing. The kid who hated learning, hated school, is actually a lifelong learner. He
That's right.
invites teachers to come
Absolutely.
into his life, and now he writes a book. All right, let's talk about the book.
Okay. And when you say write a book, I gave a talk just recently to my hometown,
Yeah.
the people that were there, my classmates, and I was saying to them, I know what you're thinking. He didn't write that book. There's no possible way Glenn wrote
Right.
that book.
Right. You had a ghostwriter or something.
Well, we did it through a series of videos, and then they transcribed the videos, and then it
Perfect.
was and then I had amazing editors.
Perfect.
And now it's on Audibles. And the reason I was now that I'm a now that I can get Audible audiobooks, I'm a learner that way.
Sure.
I remember a real transformation back when I was back in the 80s when I discovered a business bookstore that had audio tapes. It's like, oh my gosh, I can learn now because the whole reading thing did not work
Love
for
it.
me.
Okay, A Human Business. Tell us about it.
Okay, so it's a book that's based the it's got five chapters, five principles. The first principle is create a foundation of caring. So that goes right back to my childhood story of like in the classroom, I couldn't function. I used to get hives when I was in class,
Wow.
hives from stress. And then I was like a super performer outside of school. So if you don't have a caring environment, don't expect people to bring them their full selves to work. Then discover your ruling love. We hire people for what they love to do. When we hire people, we've discovered it's very difficult to take somebody and then transform them into a different kind of person. So this part isn't like something that's going to happen overnight, but over time, if you create, we have three values: be kind, be authentic, and be useful. And once everybody understood these three values, be kind, be authentic, and be useful, we hire based on those values, and we invite people to not be here anymore, or they leave if they're not interested in those values. So if you hire people that come into the company that have a love of building a community, and they love seeing other people being happy. Some people, believe it or not, they get happy when they see other people happy. There are those people in the world, and I've seen them. And I just think, you know, with 8 billion people on the planet, you would think you could get a few people that might like to build a community together where we wish well for each other. So you want people with a love of taking care of your coworker and then bringing your special talent of, you know, if you have a love of numbers, doing accounting, if you have a love of designing, maybe engineering, working with your hands, working out in the factory. So discover your ruling love. And then we do development meetings with people and we try to marry what they'd love to do with the things that we need done at SnapCab. And I'm not saying everybody lands their perfect job on day one at SnapCab, but over time, more and more we align people with what they love to do. I hired one gentleman for manufacturing the doors for our office pods. We here in Kingston, Ontario, we make office pods. And about a year went by, and he said, "You know, Glenn, I really enjoyed learning how to make office pods, but what I really love doing is teaching people. I used to have a job doing kids camps. I love that job. I wish I could get into a position of teaching people." So we really loved Stephen. We took him to Japan. We taught him lean manufacturing. Now he's our trainer at SnapCab, and he's a phenomenal trainer. So that's an example of somebody
Sure.
aligning them with what they love. The fourth chapter is focus on problems and weakness. Here at SnapCab, we reward people for making mistakes. We have boards, all we have about 13 boards throughout the entire company, where when people make a mistake, they put it up on the board. And then every day there's a management meeting where the leadership team goes around and looks at what's going wrong. And then we work with employees to come up with a solution to improve our systems and processes. Then we give them about an hour a day. The factory is a 10-hour day, so they have 1 hour a day to improve their systems and processes. And this is another reason why you have to start with caring. If you have to lower the fear, we reward for mistakes, because if you can't see the problem, you can't fix the problem.
Sure.
And believe me, sometimes it's like you have to bite your tongue, like, oh, how did that happen? But that's like a problem with us, the leadership. Usually it comes down to we didn't do enough training. We didn't have the right systems or processes. They didn't have the correct tool. So we've been celebrating our mistakes and giving people time to improve. Every day this place is getting improved. So it's no wonder that we have a thriving company, because people, when you listen to them, listen to their ideas, then they get to go implement them themselves. That's a recipe for an engaged workforce. And So we did that and many more things to let people know that we appreciate them.
Let me
So that
push.
was embrace problems and weakness. And then the last one is
Humans.
operate like the human form.
Yeah, tell me about that.
So I think we're all familiar with the normal org chart where there's one person at the top and then it cascades down. And it's usually, I've heard of people saying, well, if it's a nice company, it's like a benevolent dictatorship, but it's some sort of dictatorship. You can go work for that dictatorship company or that dictatorship company. You're free to pick whichever dictatorship company you want to work for. But the way we look at it is, I believe you do need a head, but that's more like the orchestra leader. The way your body works, the information doesn't go just from top down and not come back up. If a message you went from the head down and didn't come back up, that'd be like a horrible disease that you'd die from.
For sure.
If you had competition inside your body, you'd also die. So if you got a pebble in your shoe, would you not pull it out of your shoe like immediately? Like, how far do you go with a stone in your shoe?
Right.
But a lot of companies, the message doesn't get from the front lines back up to the decision makers. So they're going around with like dysfunctional problems that are disengaging the workers like constantly. So the management team is seen as the nervous system. The leadership team is seen as your head. Of course, manufacturing would be your hands. Sales and marketing is your face. I'm using my sales and marketing to brand myself to you right now, HR. And it's pretty simple. And if you think like those Gemba boards, that's our immune system. Is it bad? Well, let me ask you, HR, is it bad if you catch a cold? Is that bad? Is that good or bad?
Well, I guess it's good. It's eventually going to build your immune system, make you stronger.
Yeah, I think if somebody was in a bubble and never caught a cold,
No, it'd be bad.
that would be bad, right?
Sure, yeah.
And when you go to the gym to exercise, what are you doing for your muscles?
Yeah, you're strengthening your muscles. You're tearing them down so you can build them back
You're
up.
tearing them down so you can build, right? You're causing a problem for your
Yeah,
muscles.
right.
And then that's, and lucky for us, problems come, it's like the gym comes to us automatically. We don't have to go to
Every
the
day.
gym. The problems will find us, and we're using those problems to strengthen our business.
Yeah.
So we've changed our attitude from being annoyed that problems are happening to realizing, oh, we need these problems to improve. And it's quite a mind shift, and it's been a huge relief to me as a leader that I have a pretty steady stream of problems that I'm causing for my employees, my wife. I'm a problem maker. I do some good things and I create problems.
You're making people stronger all the time.
Well, I'm trying to mature as a leader, but unless I'm open to my mistakes, and I can't say to somebody, oh yeah, I screwed that up, I'm sorry. And you know what? I got short with you the other day, and me being frustrated isn't your problem. And I'm sorry that I got short with you. That gives them permission to, make mistakes too. Once we make the mistake, then we can do something about it. It's like if you had a broken arm, but you don't want to acknowledge that it's broken, you're gonna have a hard time getting it repaired.
Let me push back on this a little bit, Glenn. What would you say to the person who says, this is a bunch of touchy-feely, mumbo jumbo, bleeding heart, blah, blah, blah? What about accountability, profitability, all the stuff that makes business actually successful? How do you deal with that?
Well, yeah, you know what? I'll have to tell you one thing is maybe it's touchy feely sounding, but it's not an easy place to keep a job at. Because I can tell you that an engaged workforce is a really productive workforce.
Sure.
Two-thirds of employees are disengaged, and an engaged worker is three times more productive than a disengaged worker. And my payroll is hundreds of thousands of dollars. What percentage of those hundreds of thousands of dollars do you think is really productive? And I'm going to say there's a lot of waste going on in the money that we're paying people.
Of
People at
course.
the water cooler, people gossiping about each other, people complaining about each other, complaining about their boss, disengaged, can't wait to get home. I hate this place. Can I work from home? So I would say I could give you plenty of examples of an engaged worker that stuff just happens like magically. You can't see it right now, but sitting across from me is Jen Eamon, who wants to see this go well. So she set up a whole thing. So she's listening and she's got a wireless keyboard and stuff to make sure, since she knows I'm not great with the computer, she's going to do all the tech for me.
Okay.
Like, she wants to see me be successful. I
Sure.
want to see her be successful. So you make money when you have engaged employees. I'd say that's one thing. I would say another thing is I have two companies. I have a house that I paid cash for. I make so much money, and then once you get to a certain stage, I invest it back in the company. That's how you end up having two companies in two different countries and a lot of workers that are working for you. And since I'm not smart enough to do this on my own, I have to like build relationships with trust with other people. So they want to see me be successful, and I know for sure there's people that are cutthroat and that are very competitive and build companies full of competition that are successful, but I think it's a short-sighted way to look at it. And I'm not saying you can't be successful that way, but you're not going to have engaged employees that way. And I think if you look at the world we're living in now, I think people are getting an appetite for another way to do things these days.
All the research says that you're absolutely right. I preach the same message everywhere you go. I just did a couple talks in Vegas at a trade show last week, and I kept hammering home that retention is revenue. Retention is revenue. Do everything you can to build a place where people enjoy coming to work and being engaged. And Gallup did a study that purpose-driven companies have an 80% engagement, where task-driven companies are about 40% engaged. So, yeah, I mean, all the research is saying that what you're building is absolutely right. Caring about people, letting them feel seen, heard, valued. All the numbers, all the metrics say that you're absolutely onto something. So let's get real though. I want to get really real here. If I walked your shop floor and I talked to people and I watched how things are being done, what would they tell me is different than a typical manufacturing? Not you talking about your book, but I'm walking the floor, talking to the people, shaking
Right.
hands, asking, what would they say is different about SnapCap? What would they say?
I think for sure they would say that they listen to me. They listen to my ideas.
Okay.
I think that they would say they know me because we create numerous opportunities for our workers to share part of their personal life at work. I think they would say I matter. I'm going to say there's 4%. I don't know why this number sticks in my head. I've got a consistent 4% of people that are disgruntled. Like, I don't care what you do, there's like a bell curve, right?
Sure.
And there's always
Sure.
going to be somebody that's unhappy. There's the majority of the people are very happy. The retention part of the business that I look at is I don't mind somebody leaving that wasn't really a fit. You know, if somebody in that 4%, you know, I'm concerned about, am I wasting their time? Am I wasting their time with their life if they're feeling like they're not building a career at SnapCab? And if I don't feel like I have a career for them, you know, they can make a paycheck here for a while, but that's really not what we're about. We're here about having careers for people and having people. I want people to find their life purpose at work. I want people to take what they love, get to exercise what they love at work, and then have what the things are not good at, have their coworkers build a relationship with them by helping them with what they're not good at. And the majority of our people, I think, would fall into that.
Okay.
So I'm okay with people leaving that aren't a fit. The ones that really get me are the people that are a fit that leave. Man, that doesn't happen often, but that's painful when that happens because it's like, well, what the heck? This is a person we wanted. And if they're leaving, my HR lady said, you know, I've never seen a company that had more people return to it than this company.
Interesting.
So I've had people leave that said, you know, I've got a family. I have to make more money. We were unable to meet that opportunity they got. And then they've come back, and I've had many people take a pay cut to come back because they said I was just so unhappy at that other place. Does that
Yeah,
answer your question?
it does. Thank you. Let's finish with two questions. Question number one, if you had one message to get across to other CEOs, founders, business leaders, what's the one message? If you could shake up the business world and say, guys, ladies, we got to get this right, what's the one message, Glenn, you want to get across?
Man, I like your style, HR. This is great. I would say, do you realize the opportunity you have in front of you? You have a community of people. You have people working for you. Where do you place your value? What do you count as? If you're not clear, I would consider what you find is what does success look like? I would say success is getting to have the relationships with the people that I have at work and the customers that I have and the suppliers that I have. And I get handsomely rewarded financially, but it's a side effect of creating these relationships with all these people. If your focus is on making money and exploiting your workers to get that money, I think you should really look at what success is to you.
Okay.
I don't think many people, when they get to the end of their life, I think they're going to be asking themselves, what difference did I make? And having a bigger house and more stuff, I don't think anybody cares about.
Yeah.
What people do care about is the difference they made in other people's lives.
I love
So
it.
I think you should be focused on making a difference in people's lives. And of all the people that have an opportunity as business owners,
Tremendous responsibility, isn't it? Why is Forbes promoting your book?
I was looking for a publisher and sending it out, included Forbes. They looked at it and they said, we've never seen anything like this. Like, nobody's using a human body as a model of a business. Like, this is
Right.
completely fresh. They said, there aren't fresh things out there on the market. And they loved it. And they also loved how the book built on itself. Like, you have to start with caring, understand your ruling love. Once you understand those things, focus on being useful. Once you got all that, then you're going to have to grow through problems and weakness so you can get further. And then, once you have people doing those four chapters, now you're ready to behave like a human body at work, a human form. You can't invite people in. You can't start a business saying, "Hey, let's work like a human body," because the coordination and the collaboration that goes inside of your body, if it's not existing when you start your business, you can't start with that last chapter. You
Very good.
have to start with caring and work your way to the human body part.
Let's end with this question. I always end with a question like this. I'm at the stage in my career where I spend most of my life giving back to and investing in young leaders. It's the passion of my life. It's why I built Leader's Edge. It's why I have this podcast to invite people like you to share ideas so that the leaders coming behind us can benefit. So let's finish with this. Glenn, what would you say to that young lady, young man, maybe they're coming out of high school, they're going like, I freaking hate learning. I don't know what my career is going to be about. I don't know how I'm going to make money. Maybe they're frustrated. Maybe they went to trade school or university and they want to build a life that matters. They want to make a dent in the world like you have. What one piece of advice would you give that young person to help them in their career?
I would really look at yourself and understand what part of your life, what are the things that give you energy? I think you said earlier in this podcast, this thing about chasing your passion.
Yeah.
Well, it's a combination of passion, or I would say what you love, because sometimes I don't, do you have kids? I don't know if you have kids.
I do have
You do have
two
kids. Well, I'll
kids.
tell you what. People that talk about what they love versus passions, when you're up late at night changing a poopy diaper, you're probably not saying to yourself, "Oh my gosh,
is
I love
amazing.
this. I have such passion for changing this poopy diaper at
That's
three in
good.
the morning with this screaming kid."
Yeah,
You're
right.
probably not saying that, but you are sticking through with it because you have a love for this kid. So in yourself, the thing that you love to do that you can put together with being useful for other people, find that combination. And I can tell you, you're going to start out by doing what you love. But pretty soon, when you discover what you're doing, start searching for how that's going to benefit other people. Magically, people are going to be drawn to you like a magnet. They're going to start offering you opportunities. And when they offer you an opportunity, take it. It's not there by accident.
Right.
Take the freaking opportunity. Don't overthink it because you don't know what that door is going to lead you to. And unless you think there's something devious or terrible behind the offer, it's probably for your own good. So take the offer if you can do something to help somebody and it's alignment with what you love to do.
I love it, Glenn. I love your story. I love your resilience. I love the irony that the kid who had a hard time learning is now teaching and writing books and
I know.
consistently learning. I love that irony. I love the combination of doing what you love or being useful. Both those have to intersect. I love your story, and thank you for the book, A Human Business. I really appreciate your time, my friend.
Okay, thank you so much, Atra.
That's it for today's show. Thank you for joining us on The Leader's Edge. I hope today's conversation inspired you to lead with even greater purpose and impact. Here are my three big takeaways from our conversation with Glenn. Number one, be useful. Doing what you love is not enough. You need to find out how you can be useful to others to create space for you in the marketplace. People are only going to pay you and give you money when you are useful. Number two, never stop learning. I think my favorite part of this whole story is that the kid who hated school has found different ways to learn. He hired mentors to help him keep growing, and now the kid who hated books has written a book. I love that so much. Number three, surround yourself with great people. Again and again and again, Glenn talked about the different people in his life and how he hires and interviews and his executive assistant and all the people that he surrounded himself with have helped him build SnapCab in his life. Find people who love what you love and invite them in your life if you want to build something special. Be very selective of the people you invite into your life and business. All right, if you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. I would love a five-star review on your favorite podcast platform. Your feedback helps us reach more leaders like you. And that's the whole point. Stay connected with us on social media for behind-the-scenes content, leadership insights, and updates on future episodes. Check us out at yourleadersedge.com and follow us at Leaders Edge Podcast on all the major platforms. Until next time, keep pushing boundaries, keep leading at the edge. I'm HR Huntsman, and we'll see you soon.